listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.
There was an ambush in a place called Modrini in North Tipperary.
Okay.
Right. Just to broaden the thing a little bit.
Sure.
So you're just outside your area. What's unusual about it is there's been a very good series done in Tipperary on specific actions and activities, right?
Okay.
It's done by the Tipperary Historical Society. I don't know if you can see this now.
Yeah.
Or not.
Again.
Right. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. It's they did a series of centenary booklets. Now it's under the Sean Hogan.
Okay.
Who the hell is Sean Hogan? Right. Sean Hogan was the man in charge of the National Emergency Response Unit, like the time of the snow. There a couple of years ago.
Right.
Sean Hogan was responsible for digging us out.
Oh, brilliant. The beast from the east came to torment us.
Yes, the beast from the east. That was Sean
Hogan.
Very nice fellow. He's from North Tipperary. He's from Ionina, right?
Okay.
Now, he did a very good book on the black and tans in North Tipperary. It's done about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But it's extremely good. But he edited this series that was done by... in conjunction with Tipperary Library, you know, and there's about let's see now, there's quite a number of books in it. The Lara attack, there was an ambush in Lara, right?
Okay.
Mainly around North Tipperary. The shooting called Mark Burke, which occurred I think around Newport. The Ashtown ambush is up in Dublin, but it has a Tipperary interest because Dan Breen.
So there's always a connection.
Yeah, it's always connected. Hogan was in it, Sean Tracy was in it, Robinson was in it, and as I say, the Tipperary Pincushion, Dan Breen.
Uh-huh.
He was wounded, like, there was a book done years ago about which made him out to be a thug, which he wasn't. Now, Breen was, how would I put it, Joe? There was no man wounded more often in the war of independence. I call him the Tipperary Pincushion, right? He was wounded at Knocklong.
Yes.
Two wounds in Knocklong, right? That was in May 1919. In December 1919, he was wounded at Ashtown. The assassination attempt on Lord French.
Okay.
Now, I have a personal interest in that one because when he was wounded, he was taken to my granduncle's house. My granduncle had a chemist shop in Dublin. Can't think of the name of the place now, the north side of Dublin. And because my grandfather or my granduncle was from Tipperary, he would know these fellas.
Of course.
So he was they would take his house, or Breen was taking his house, and he was patched up.
Sure.
And moved on, and the house was raided a couple of days later. It was in December 1919. The house was raided a couple of days later, and there was two or three kids, four kids, I'd say, and the mother, and they were forced to stand out on the landing in their nightclothes in December, and she got pneumonia out of it, and eventually she died.
Oh, gee.
She didn't die straight away.
It was as a result of it, yeah.
But, as I say, that was her holding on to the Tipperary pincushion. He was wounded a number of times afterwards. badly wounded at Fellside.
Okay.
And Tracy escaped out of it. Now, as I say, I saw a book written a couple of years ago by a fellow called Ambrose, right? And it depicted Breen as being the tub with blood in his hands. I said one thing.
The blood was more often his own.
If Breen had blood in his hands,
it'd be his own.
His own. as I say, I met him once.
Oh, really?
I actually met him. Yeah. We live down in a place called Captain Quinn in County Waterford.
Okay.
My father worked on big estates as a cowman in big estates. No, he was from Tipperary.
Okay.
But as I said, West Waterford, we were living in Captain Quinn, as I said. That was part of South Tipperary for electoral purposes.
Right.
The first time I ever heard the words gerrymandered, you
yes.
Was in the election 1960, 1961, where the opposition to Peter Hall would be all talking about that the constituency was gerrymandered, like as if they would vote if they the opposition.
They just didn't think of it first.
Yeah. But Breen, because his last election, and he came down the street and he recognised my father. So I was with my father. Is that you?
Yeah.
So. As I said, that was 1961. Now, he died, he finished in the Dáil, that was his last election.
Okay.
He died in 1968-69. But there's an awful lot said against him. And I have to say, of all the fans in Tipperary, I have most admiration for Breen, because I tell you, he was the one person that circumvented the Civil War. He did not bear a Civil War prejudice or grudge.
Yes.
Do you know, so that
that's like a very difficult thing to say, because you know it's rare.
It is very rare. And I would say, like, to give because it's due. He, as I say, he never, you know, he was still very friendly with people on the other side.
Yes.
He remained friendly. Like a story is told about John Joe O'Brien in Galway. Right. John Joe O'Brien had been involved in the rescue of Sean Hogan at Loch Long.
Sure.
Now, whereas his relationship with Hogan would have been very touchy in later years, his relationship with Breen was much warmer, right? And the story is told, and I got this from my uncle, that when we said a free state lost power in 1932, now, John Joe O'Brien, the story told, right, was that while the Free State were in power in the 1920s, John Joe had a pub with Galway, and John Joe kept John Joe's owls.
Okay.
And there was very little, I think, the sergeant of the guards could do about it.
Yes.
Now, the sergeant apparently was from County Sligo. I suppose an honest enough man, right? But when there was a change of, shall we say, a party in 1932, the sergeant spotted his opportunity. And he started to clamp down on John Joe O'Brien.
Oh, no.
Now, the other publicans in Galway, he was leaving, he wasn't too bad and too hard on him, but
yes.
My God, he was letting John Joe know who was boss, right? So John Joe said to him one day, he says, just Sergeant said, if you don't go easy, he says, you'll have me out of the business, you know?
Yeah.
Sergeant said to him, well, Mr. O'Brien, he says, you should know that there's a different jockey on the horse now.
Love it.
Well, anyway, I said, Paddy, he says, I'd see you already here, yes. But he had a problem. As I say, first, he might have had influence with the Free State
yes.
authorities and the Cumann na Gael people. He had little or no, what's called, with the...
with this new lad. Yeah.
So anyhow, he thought of his situation and he contacted his friend Mr. Breen.
Okay.
And as I say, Breen, to be fair to Breen, he never the Civil War didn't impact him. So he had friends on both sides.
Sure.
He was a bit of a rogue, yes, but a lovable rogue in his own way. Right now, anyhow, apparently John Joe contacted Dan Breen, and Breen says, I see what I can do for you, you know.
Yes.
So he went to De Valera, anyhow, he says, there's a friend of mine down in that's called Galby in County Limerick. He's a public house, you know, probably gave the name John Joe Bryan, you know? And he says he's having fierce hassle from the sergeant of the guards down there.
Okay.
You know, a sergeant, I think there's a sergeant, Carlos, doesn't matter what the man's name was, anyhow. Says, he says, will I do something about it?
Oh, will you? Very good.
And refusing me, the mayor says to him, I take care of it then, you know?
Yes.
So, sergeant was moved. Now, as I say, the one thing I would say all the time about Breen is that said against him, but he never, he walked across the Civil War divide.
Yes.
An instance in case now is that a lady we spoke about some time previously, Mae Maloney. Now, Mae Maloney, when she was trying to get a pension, I mean, the fact that she was turned down three times for a pension was a disgrace.
Of course.
She was, I'd say there was no woman in Ireland. No.
Braver, no woman, yeah, yeah.
Braver, and as if from the early stage, right? And to be fair to Breen, he fought her case, but I don't think he had as much clout as maybe he thought he had.
Yes.
Because she still took it,
took three times.
Three times before she got it. Anyhow, coming back to Madrini, just Madrini ambush, right?
Yes.
Number of things very interesting about it, right? Sean Hogan, you probably don't know Sean, but let's say he was in charge of the emergency response. But he managed to track down one of the surviving RIC men.
Amazing.
And interviewed him in 1989. That's almost...
He must have been incredibly old.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was almost, 70 years?
70 years after the event. Amazing.
After the event, and he got a very good, a very detailed interview from him. Now, as I say, basically what happened was there was a court to be held in Clough Jordan.
Yes.
And this police convoy was travelling from Borrisachain to Clough Jordan. Now, they were expecting, policemen on bicycles.
Sure.
But there was a number of police in cars as well.
Right.
And that complicated matters.
Of course.
But the ambush went ahead regardless, right? Now, the man in charge of the ambush, I was a fellow called Sean Gaynor. I think he's either an uncle or a father to Lynn Gaynor, the great Dick Perry Hull of the 60s.
Okay.
You know, so as I say, it's out there all the time. Now, the second in command, I think, was a fellow called Sean Collison from Moneygall.
Okay.
Now, Collison is a granduncle to the two uncles that are billionaires, or a big granduncle, the two uncles that are billionaires today.
Oh, the Stripe Company founders, yeah.
Stripe, yeah. So I see, it's out there all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's
making the connections.
Isn't that hilarious? Yeah.
As I say, the patrol was a mixed patrol of bicycles, fellas on bicycles,
okay.
And fellas in cars. Okay. Now, I don't think they expected the men in cars. You know, I think the initial thought was that it would be, you know, a cycle patrol going to...
And a cycle patrol would be easy enough to dispatch, really.
Yeah. There'd be a limited number,
yeah.
Right? But as to, instead of meeting cultures on bicycles,
yes.
I think between bicycles and cars, motor cars, it was something about 28 fellows.
So more than they thought, more than they were expecting.
Yeah. And nonetheless, four of the police were killed and quite a number of them were injured. Now, the sad, how to put it to you, or the sad or ironic thing about it is that the RIC man that gave the IRA the tip-off, right,
mm-hmm.
about the patrol going to Clough Jordan, he was one of the men killed.
Oh.
There was four RIC men killed. Right? He was one of them, yeah. Now, there's another RIC man killed. He was a black and tan, right?
Yes.
But much has been said against black and tans. But this man was a decorated soldier from the First World War. So he wasn't sure. He said that, okay, a lot of the blackened heads might be thugs.
Yes.
But a lot also were brave men.
But again, you see, it's hard. You can't use the broad spectrum when you look at any of the sides.
Yes, I have learned one thing, if I've learned nothing. Every man is accountable for his own actions.
That's it. You can't, like, you know, you can take a dim view of the black and tans for the fact that they were here, but they weren't all the same kind.
Yeah, and remember now, you guys look at this. When those guys had gone out and fought, as they thought, for Britain and for whatever, in the First World War, they came back after the war.
To nothing. They came back to nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing. So, I mean, if the situation arose where they're looking for policemen in Ireland...
They will take the King's shilling.
Yeah, they joined up. Now, again, some well-ruthless men, there's no question about that. They were damaged from the war.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is directly after the First World War, with no counselling, no rehabilitation, no nothing. Nothing at all.
No, nothing. And probably no education either.
Yeah.
And a lot of them would literally have gone from school to the trenches.
War. And from war to Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's... what would you expect? You know, that, as you say, no counselling. There was no understanding. There was an awful lot of fellas executed in the First World War, right? And really, if you looked at it in terms today, there were men who had been damaged. They had been damaged by their experience.
Yeah. No understanding whatsoever of PTSD or anything at all.
Yeah, and as I said, the powers that be back in London, it was very easy for them to make judgments.
Just numbers on paper, you know, they weren't humans, they weren't people. Just numbers, rank numbers, and that's it.
Yeah, they were just, dare I say, a cannon fodder for you know, for up and down.
That's it.
Now, as I say, going back to Modrini, there was 12 men on bicycles, 12 RIC men on bicycles.
Sure.
Most were either wounded or killed. Now, the fellas in cars, one of the cars managed to turn and get away of it.
Okay.
You know, so the problem with that was they would go back to Boris Kane and probably bring on reinforcements. So the IRA had a problem, said that this car had gotten away. So if they didn't get a quick resolution, you know, they could be in trouble. But as I say, either way, anyhow, there was 4 RIC men killed. One of them was a black and tan, Briggs was his name.
Okay.
But as I say, he was what? He was in his 20s, right? But he obviously had been a brave man because he had military, a number of decorations.
Okay.
3 of the men killed were RIC men, and all of them from, they were Irishmen. One from Carlow, one from Sligo, and one from, I think, Roscommon.
And one of them was the man who had informed.
And one of them was the man who had given the tip. Now, you know, it's very hard to rationalise that. The same happened in Abbeyfield.
Great.
There was an ambush in Abbeyfield in September 1920. Right, and they were IRA, were I consider Sean Finn, right? They were 1920, they were trying to take out. There was an extremely ruthless black and tan serving in Abbeyfield.
Yes,
I can't think of his name now offhand, but they decided to ambush the curfew patrol, right? To ambush the curfew patrol to take care, dare I say it, of this obnoxious RIC man.
Sure.
And fortunately for him, and unfortunately for others, he wasn't on the patrol that night.
Oh.
But there was a constable O'Mahony. I think O'Mahony was his name, who had been, dare I say it, the IRA's contact in the barracks, And he was one of two policemen that were killed. There was a second fellow constable O'Donoghue from Monaghan.
There you go. It's just chance or fate or the luck of the draw, isn't it?
Yes, it's like the other thing that happened in Whistler on similar nature was when Constable Masterson was killed at near Newcastle West at what's called Cross Hill outside between Newcastle West and Rathkeel. There's a cross hill just outside Newcastle West.
Oh, it's not Reen's Pike, is it? Is that the one?
No, it's not Reen's Pike. Could be Hoolan Orden.
That's the one.
Right. Now, I basically got it out. Now, there was a Constable Masterson, right? And he was shot by the IRA.
Yes.
Now, there was an inquiry in the IRA as to what happened, because he was Sean Finn's contact in the barracks in Newcastle West.
Yeah.
And, as I say, he was executed by
the IRA?
By members of the IRA. Now, as I say...
Did they think he was passing information both ways? Like, what did they think?
No, they didn't know, you see. They just saw him as an opportunity.
Okay.
You know, they were aware that... You see, what happened was, his family were up in Galway.
Right.
And his family, he was going up in Galway to bring the family back to... Newcastle West.
Sure.
And he had hired a taxi man. Now he had to book the taxi man in advance.
Yes.
And the taxi man was either in the IRA or friendly with people in the IRA.
Okay.
And told him. And of course, Masterson was ambushed.
And that was that. Yeah, it was just an opportunistic thing, but it was kind of ironic as well, because he wasn't.
Yeah, and Sean Finn was not very happy.
I would say not.
Well, as I said, some accounts say that he was going to court martial the four people involved. Now, two of the men involved, I think they suffered from when they realised what had happened.
Yes.
It impacted them. But the other two men involved...
They didn't care.
Fairly hardened anyhow. It didn't impact them. But as I say... It did impact two.
See, there you go. That's the kind of the implication of these decisions that you make in this context, isn't it? You can't take it back.
Well, it's very easy to blame them, but you see, they saw an opportunity.
That's it. And these kind of impulsive decisions, like, you can't reverse them.
Yeah, they weren't aware of the fact that this man had been acting the maggot, right?
Yes.
But that was to keep the... The black and tans.
Happy.
Black and tans.
Yeah.
Yeah. They thought this dog, but he's gung ho, like, you know?
Yeah.
He's actually hoping for the fact that he's passing on information.
That he's passing on information. Yeah. He obviously did it too well. That's it.
He did it too well. You know?
He was an excellent actor. It was unfortunate for him.
But unfortunately for him, no, I think he was from County Leitrim, Masterson, as I said, as I say, he was killed at Coolin Orden in July 1920. Yeah.
But I suppose it just goes to show that, you know, the best laid plans can go wrong, or just chance or fate, you know.
Yeah. Well, as I say, you had the situation with Constable Masterson in Coolin Orden, Constable O'Mahony in Abbeyfield.
And Abbeyfield.
And Constable Feeney.
In Madrini.
In Madrini.
Yeah, so there you go. You can make as many plans as you want, but sometimes things have to have their own way, don't they?
Things go their own way, yeah.
You have been listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.